Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 6th Big Planet Comics podcast. It's been brought to my attention that I do not introduce myself on these things, so I just want to let people know that my name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Jared.
Yeah, so we're all here. We're ready to do this. Let's go right into the news. You guys ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do this. So the first bit of news is something concerning us, and it's pretty cool. Basically, Nick Abadzis, who wrote the graphic novel Laika, which is about the first dog sent into space, is he's posting alternative endings to his graphic novel on our webpage.
Yes.
Which would bigplanetcomics.com.
That is bigplanetcomics.com if you're not there already getting this podcast. Yeah, so it's pretty cool. It's definitely worth checking out. There's the first one's up now. The new one's going up on Friday. And yeah, we were getting a little press from it. We got a link on io9, and we were on the Discovery Channel webpage, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
I think that's amazing.
It's pretty cool. So we're pretty famous. So yeah, we're awesome. All right, so that's that. And then we got just another little weird bit of news here. This isn't even news. I just thought this was funny. Grant Morrison said that the Superman redesign for the New 52, which is the DC relaunch in September, if you haven't listened to every single one of these.
Wait, DC is relaunching?
I know. Oh, it's my crazy. God. Oh, yeah. We should talk about that.
What am I going to do?
It's not a relaunch. They said no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
different word.
Wait, no. It's not a reboot. Anyway, but speaking of boots, Superman's redesign is based on Bruce Springsteen.
Hell yeah.
Grant,
the boss.
Wait, what?
I know. It's really funny. Grant Morrison said, with what we're doing, he's wearing jeans and a t-shirt, a Bruce Springsteen version of Superman. That's the angle we're taking. The cape's still indestructible, but the rest is picked up in a shop.
Makes sense. I mean, he was born in the USA.
I think he definitely was not born in the USA. Wasn't he born on Krypton?
Yeah, like USA Krypton.
Bruce Springsteen will have to change his song to Raised in the USA.
Nice.
So I don't really know what there is to say about that.
That's
it's
amazing.
Incredible. I'm pretty excited about seeing Superman, you know, belt out some tunes and play some sweet guitar riffs. And
these truly will be the glory days of Superman.
But see, the problem is going to be that, like, when he changes costume, it's going to be even worse than, like, the glasses, because he won't even change what he's wearing.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to take off my pants and put on these jeans.
Yeah, can you wear jeans to the Daily Planet? I don't know.
I don't know. Can you wear the jeans to, like, Justice League meetings?
I don't know.
They were, like, formal?
I don't know if there's a dress code at the Hall of Justice.
Probably. Seem pretty informal, I would say. They're kind of revealing a lot of their...
I would love to see, like, in the new Justice League, if there's a meeting where they're all just, like, dressed in, like, regular clothes.
They're all totally casual. It's casual Fridays at the Justice League
yeah,
Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, speaking of that, also, I guess Wonder Woman, DC's gone back and forth on this. Do our characters have to wear pants? Do they not have to wear pants, our female characters? It looks like Wonder Woman...
Wait, pants?
Pants. The American version of pants, not British pants, like underwear.
No, I understood that, but...
Yeah, wow. Basically they said all the female characters were going to wear pants because it was more respectful or something. But
well, I mean, you don't want to walk around naked.
But they totally dropped that idea, and Wonder Woman's back in her like star-spangled panties.
Awesome.
I guess that's awesome. Whatever.
I mean, because they've done like the skirts over the years, but yeah, more iconic.
Yeah, somebody was asking me about that. Said
really?
That Wonder Woman used to wear a skirt. I don't know anything about Wonder
Woman. I mean,
Woman.
There's nothing sexy about women in pants.
That's true. Maybe a pantsuit.
Wait, was that insensitive?
Well, Wonder Woman wore a pantsuit, right? Wasn't she like Diana Prince, pantsuit lady?
Oh, yeah, yeah. God, back in the 70s?
Or? Yeah, read those again.
Back in the 70s.
She was all mod. Maybe it was in the 60s.
Yeah, so that's basically all of our news. It's not a very big news week. I mean, Comic-Con's coming up next week, so we'll have a lot of news out of there. But yeah, that's all we got for now. So let's jump right into viewer mail. Oh, I got this. What? Old Faithful.
Old Faithful.
All right, so we got a few viewer mails this time. So the first one's from Mark. He says, I'm introducing my girlfriend to comics, and she has enjoyed thus far Unwritten. It's a very good comic.
It's very good.
But she wants to try a superhero comic. What would be a good intro to superhero books? My thoughts were either Ultimate Spider-Man or Invincible, but I'll happily take other suggestions. Thanks, Mark. So what do you guys think? Jared, what do you think is a good...
The most current storyline of Fables, definitely.
I guess that does have superheroes in it, doesn't it?
Vaguely.
That's kind of a workaround, though.
Sort of, yeah.
I'm joking. That's a good question.
New superhero comic. I mean, Irredeemable is pretty good. It's a pretty good intro thing where you don't really have to know anything about like any of the background of the superheroes, and you can just kind of jump in.
Yeah, but if you're going with that thing, then Mark's point of Invincible, I think, is a better one.
Yeah, yeah.
Standalone superhero story.
Yeah, Invincible is pretty good.
Yeah, Invincible is really good, and Corruptible is really good. I'd say the best thing is sort of steer clear of the continuity heavy Marvel and DC books and go for stuff like Invincible and Corruptible. Irredeemable, or try standalone books like Batman Year One is a really good one.
Yeah, definitely.
And like JLA Earth 2 is a good one. You know, stuff like that. Or any of the Tim Sale Jeff Loeb, like Spider-Man Blue is really good because it's a really, it's like a good character story.
Yeah, but even with that, it's kind of assuming you know enough about these characters to see why it's more relevant. So
it's
I don't know.
It's good for women too because it's all emotional and stuff.
No, don't say that.
Am I getting worse by the minute?
You are getting worse by the minute. Talking about panties and emotions and yeah, we're going to have to cut you out of this podcast.
Just to be sure, that's Nick talking about that, not me or Kevin.
But yeah, you're definitely on the right track with Invincible and Ultimate Spider-Man, actually. Ultimate Spider-Man's a really accessible book, and it's a lot of fun. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's really good.
So hopefully, Mark, we answered your question by telling you that you had already picked the correct things.
Yeah, just send us questions that you want us to say that you're right, and we will answer them happily.
Thank you, Mark Miller.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for saying his name so that people can stalk him.
We have
his
email, too.
He lives at 25... No, I...
If you want to hang out with him, just talk to him about Game of Thrones books. He loves those things.
They're good.
All right. So we've got another question from Mike. Basically, Mike has three questions, and one of them is a two-parter. So this is four questions. And this is bordering on Jessica territory.
Wait. What happened to Jessica's questions?
Jessica didn't send us any questions this week.
We lost our first super fan.
Yeah. I saw her from a distance when I was walking down the street the other day. So I think.
Was she like in her house?
Well, she was 100 yards away, as is ordered by law.
She didn't send you any questions.
She didn't send me any questions, no. All right. But let's see what Mike says here. So Mike's first question is really a two-parter. And this is a really good question. What indie creator would you like to see on a Marvel or DC comic? Even just a one shot or what comic character would you like to see him writing? So an indie creator.
Wait, that's two questions too.
Well, that's what I said. It is two questions. Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is two parts.
So what indie creator would you like to see on a Marvel or DC comic?
Well, I'd love to see, I can't remember his name, but the kid that writes Axe Cop. I'd like them to see him write like a Spider-Man comic. I feel like that would be incredible. If it was drawn by like Frank Cho and written by, you know, kid who writes Axe Cop, I think that would be pretty incredible.
Yeah, that would be pretty insane. If you don't know about Axe Cop, it's basically written by a five-year-old.
Yeah.
I guess he's six by now.
Oh, he is six, but that would be amazing.
What do you think, Jared?
I'm kind of going with that one right now. I was thinking of like some really great European person like Manara or something, but then they got Milo Manara to do an X-Men comic, and it was such a waste of his talents that I feel like those people should stay away from Marvel books.
Yeah, it was it was written by Chris Claremont. So
I forgot that part. Yeah. That's true.
Well, I'd like to see... James Stokoe did like a little short Silver Surfer thing in Strange Tales. And I'd love to see him do a full-length Silver Surfer comic. His art, he does Orc Stain and Wonton Soup. His art's insane.
It's incredible. Yeah, and, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think he'd be really good on it. So, all right, let's move on. His second question is, this is kind of the opposite. What mainstream writer or artist who isn't already doing creator-owned work would you like to see doing something of their own?
See, that's the thing. Most of them, I guess, have done their own kind of thing.
Yeah,
but I'm trying to think of one that hasn't.
There was a thing. Someone asked this question like back 10 years ago or so to Warren Ellis, and he started pointing out that almost everyone who's done comics has tried at some point to do their own creator-owned thing, and it usually failed terribly.
That's true. Especially all the Marvel guys right now all started out doing indie comics, like Brian Bendis and Matt Fraction and Jonathan Hickman and basically everybody.
J.T. Krull. I don't know. I would like to see him.
That would actually be probably with like the restraints off.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, we kind of rag on him. He's written some terrible things, but I don't know how much of that is his fault. Because like he all the things he's written have been like Rise of Arsenal was like, here, we need somebody to write this, and like they just kind of throw him on books when there's no writer or artist on it. Like when a run ends, they're like, hey, you want to write this? Okay, I'm interested in what he would do if he had it like free reign to do whatever he wanted.
With a little planning,
could be good.
Perhaps. Yeah, it could be.
It couldn't be worse, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, that's pretty good.
I mean, that's a hard question.
It is a hard question.
There's not many others.
Because these days, everyone that we kind of like either came from an independent background where they did their own creator-owned stuff or,
That's it.
I'd like to see Dan Slott try his hand at something.
Yeah, I guess we haven't seen a good Dan Slott.
Yeah, he's great at writing. You know, he wrote the great She-Hulk stuff. He's doing great stuff on Spider-Man right now. I think he could do a really good character-driven story of his own. I'd like to see that.
What the?
Why did that just happen?
That was spontaneous sound effect.
That was a spontaneous sound effect.
I thought we were about to move on to the next part of the third question.
I think the thing
I guess that was telling us to do that. So so Mike's third question is, can you recommend a webcomic? He recommends Bucko by Jeff Parker and Eric Mohn. And that's his last question. So thanks, Mike, for those. What do you guys think? What's a good webcomic?
I don't read webcomics.
You don't read webcomics. Well, one I like is Multiplex. I like that a lot. It's about a group of people that work at a movie theater, and that one's a lot of fun. Jared, you read a few webcomics here and there, don't you?
Yep. Order of the Stick, which is out in a couple of books and is super fantasy-driven but really funny, but it helps if you've played a lot of Dungeons & Dragons.
Well, I did read some of the Zynga comics when those were still coming out. I like Bayou a lot, but
Zynga? No, Zynga is like the people that make Farmville.
Oh, Zynga. No, what is it?
Zynga.
That's it.
Zynga. I thought it was the little game you played at the
I've been playing poker. Yeah, I've been playing Zynga poker on Facebook for like the last like 3 hours straight. Sorry.
Also, anything on Activate's really good. It's got a lot of great people on there, like Ulysses Fairness and Dean Haspiel. And yeah. So that stuff's worth checking out.
Oh, yeah. Those are awesome, actually.
Another one, Least I Could Do, I think, is a Canadian guy. The thing I like about his stuff, it's really good. He's moved through several artists, and the current guy is a really cartoony styled one, but really good. The thing he does is he puts an update every day, which I think is pretty impressive. And he's never missed a day. He's like, this is our job, and this is what we should be doing. And that's a really interesting attitude, and I think is a good way of making sure people stay with an online comic.
And Hark a Vagrant by Kate Beaton.
Indeed.
That's a fantastic
one. Oh, yeah.
All right,
Red Web Comics.
So that's it for viewer mail. Thanks, Mark and Mike, for sending in your questions. If you guys have questions, send them to us, please, at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. We will read them on the air, and it's one of our favorite parts of doing this podcast. So definitely send those questions in.
Yeah, and we love to hear from you guys. So if you got comments in general, it doesn't have to be a question.
You can just tell us we suck. That's cool, too.
Yeah, that's cool. That's totally fine.
Then we'll invite you on the show and make fun of you.
So Nick has heard this.
What?
But God.
But Jared has not heard this yet.
They've warned me that something's coming.
But I wrote a little jingle for our review section. So let's play that now.
It is.
We love comics, they're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews. So that was my...
Not fair, I wasn't ready.
You guys might notice that I didn't read a lot of the comics this week. And that's
for a change.
Yeah, I was working on that jingle all night.
For the last like 24 hours he's been working on it.
It's true. All right, so let's jump into these reviews.
But that filled in our like Scott Lobdell joke for the night.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Although there'll be more.
We might change the lyrics next time. I don't know. All right, so the first book we've got here is All Winter Squad Band of Heroes number 2 by Paul Jenkins and Carmine Di Giandomenico, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
You always get the good names.
Yeah, so the first issue of this was really good, but I actually thought this one was better. What'd you guys think of it?
I definitely thought it improved on everything in the first issue. You got a little more understanding of the different heroes, because almost all of them are new except for, Captain America.
Can you tell people what the series is about, actually?
Oh, yeah. If you haven't read it yet. All Winter Squad is about, I mean, the framework for it is this old guy is basically telling his daughter about his time as a superhero in World War II, which he, like, reveals at the end of the first issue. Spoiler alert. But anyway, this is the second issue, so you should have already read it. But and so that's the framework for it. And most of it is actually just his stories from World War II. And there's kind of a weird conspiracy angle being built up. One of the characters has really crazy, uncontrollable powers, and he's being covered up somehow by the government, and you don't know what happened. And then something really crazy happens at the end of this issue.
Like, much more than the idea of, like, the defenders of Captain America punching out Hitler. It's much more the idea that the superheroes who existed in the Marvel Universe were used as a special ranger, like, special forces squad in World War II with Captain America leading them. So it's much grittier than the kind of old style stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, and the story it's mixed with about the old man telling his daughter, granddaughter,
I think it's granddaughter,
about all of it is pretty cool.
It might be granddaughter.
Descendant.
Yeah, and all the mystery elements of it are good. Actually, I think this was one of the better books that came out this week. It was a lot of fun.
Definitely, it was one of my favorites.
All right, so All Winter Squad Band of Heroes gets an A+ all around. It sounds like.
Yeah, and the art was great too.
Yeah.
All right, and our second book this week is Black Panther number 521 by David Liss and Francesco Francavilla. I didn't read this. Jared didn't read this, but Nick will not stop talking about it. Tell people about this book, Nick.
I didn't read it either. No, I'm just kidding.
Looked good.
This is probably my favorite book of the week. I'm not sure.
Whoa.
I went back and forth with a bunch of things, but it's incredible. I mean, if you've been reading the Black Panther stuff, it's been really good so far, but this takes it to like an amazing level. It's like really funny and really weird, but like it's awesome. It's basically, this issue is about it's a tie into Fear Itself, but very loosely tied into it. And it's about the first 10 pages or so are just about this guy who's like really racist, and then like really he's so racist that like it causes him to lose his wife and his job, and he becomes homeless, and then he's just holding up signs that are really racist, and he like idealizes a hate monger and makes his own hate monger costume.
He sounds really racist.
yeah. I can't really mention some of the things he says, but he makes his own hate monger costume, and he's like, I'm gonna be a hate monger. And then by coincidence, it's really crazy. Like, Hatemonger's space entity takes over his body, and there...
I saw that coming.
Actually. He has a kind of a lackey that's called the American Panther, who's kind of like Black Panther, but he's a little bit of a mix between Black Panther and Captain America, but he's like a super racist Black Panther kind of guy, and it's about him, like, trying to go after Black Panther, but not Black Panther himself, like his civilian identity, and it's amazing.
So definitely the most racist book of the week.
Yeah.
And
the book itself isn't racist, just the character.
Right. And the Black Panther series has been great with David Liss and Franco Villa.
Yeah, the art's been amazing.
That's the best thing. I mean, the Franco Villa art makes it amazing. And you get, usually it's like all noir stuff, and this, you get to see him draw weird space stuff and like weird blobs going into people's mouths, and it's crazy.
Cool. Yeah, your description of it definitely made me want to read it.
I don't know if it's the best of the week, but it's certainly one of the most interesting sounding of the week.
It's one I enjoyed a lot.
All right, so moving on to a trade that came out this week. The Blackest Night trade finally came out. I want to say those issues came out about 2 years ago, maybe. Blackest Night was by Jeff Johns and Ivan Reis. It's part of the Green Lantern storyline. It was kind of their DC's big event from last year. I was actually a big fan of Blackest Night, especially the Green Lantern issues. That trade also came out this week. It's called Green Lantern Blackest Night. And particularly in that, the lead-in issue that's about the bad guy in it, the Black Hand. And like the way he grew up, and it's really like a
character study of how someone becomes a really messed up evil villain.
Yeah, in ways it's similar to the Red Skull Incarnate book that we talked about last week. But then the rest of the thing is about dead Green Lanterns coming back to life and dead superheroes coming back to life. I know you tried to read it today. You couldn't really get into it.
I'm so far behind on Green Lantern, and I'm not a DC guy either, so it feels like there's a lot. It's definitely like a book that's a great culmination if you've been following Green Lantern, or particularly Jeff Johns' Green Lantern, but to dive right in is a little heavy. They are dumping a lot of stuff at you.
For the most part, I loved it when it was coming out, and I'm really I've been really into Green Lantern, you know, since Jeff Johns has been writing it, and the one problem I have is that I'm starting to get a little tired of all the colored lanterns and stuff like that. I just want them to be Green Lantern stories.
Yeah, what are there? There are purple lanterns, there are orange lanterns, yellow lanterns.
Indigo lanterns.
Oh, they're not called purple. They're red lanterns, blue lanterns. Yeah, it's at the beginning, it was. I thought it was pretty interesting, but it's been going on for a while. But basically, I guess that's not going to be happening anymore. No, that's not true.
We'll see, I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know. But anyway, this is it's awesome. It's basically just all the heroes in the DC universe fighting all the dead heroes in the DC universe, basically.
Yeah, it's like Marvel Zombies, except it actually takes place in the DC universe, and it's not humorous like Marvel Zombies. No. I wish I had a little more of a sense of humor than it
does. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's a little bit of a sense of humor, like when Ralph Dibny is one of the first zombies that shows up. They're not really called zombies in the comic, but they're zombies. But
they're definitely zombies.
Yeah. He shows up and he's like, my nose is twitching. I smell a mystery. And then he just like eats Hawkman or something.
Yeah, that part's pretty awesome.
Nice.
All right, so that's Blackest Night. I liked it. Nick liked it. Jared just hasn't read a lot of Green Lantern stuff, so I think he was a little lost. Plus, there is a lot of text in the beginning of this.
Yeah, there's a lot of setup to get all the ideas across. But
plus,
yeah.
Jared hates the color green.
Does he?
I don't want to talk about it.
All right, so moving on to a pretty big book that came out this week, which was Captain America number 1 by Ed Brubaker and Steve McNiven. Brubaker has been writing the regular Captain America series for a while, starting with the Winter Soldier storyline, which is, I mean, Captain America has been good for what, like 5 years now?
Never heard of him.
Yeah, he basically took Captain America, who was just another like kind of almost B-level Marvel character at the time, and relaunched him into relevance and awesomeness.
Whoa, don't call Captain America B-level.
Before that, what was he doing? I don't remember.
He was doing stuff. I mean, he was fighting terrorists.
He turned into a werewolf at one point.
Well, actually, like right before Ed Brubaker was writing it, all the Captain America comics were about him fighting like terrorists, because it was like right after 9/11.
That's true. They were trying to make it relevant.
They were kind of awesome, but yeah, they weren't that great. I mean...
But yeah, Brubaker's run has been great, and basically Bucky took over as Captain America for a while, and for reasons that we shouldn't go into, maybe, I don't know. But basically, Steve Rogers...
What, a movie?
Bucky is dead.
Yeah, it's true. Bucky is dead. Sorry.
Is people, he? But people should know that.
Is he?
Yeah, it happened like a month and a half ago. I think
it,
people
it was like
know
3 weeks
now.
Ago.
Right.
No. Oh, no, yeah, no, it was like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, yeah.
All right, so Bucky's dead, and again. and Steve Rogers is Captain America again, and... this is kind of a cool, it's a story of its own, I feel like. It ties into Steve Rogers' time in World War II, and will hopefully tie into the new Captain America and Bucky book that's coming out. And the art by Steve McNiven is great. I mean, he did Civil War, and he did Old Man Logan.
And this reminds me a lot of the first issue of Invincible Iron Man, because you can easily read it if you've just seen the movie. You know, really little to nothing about Captain America. You can be like, oh, let's jump into this, because it doesn't deal with actually like Bucky's death or any of the Fear Itself stuff that's happened. It clearly takes place after Fear Itself, because that's when he becomes Captain America. But it's easy to get
like,
into.
Here's Captain America. Go. It's fast. It's thrilling. It's got amazing art layouts.
I was surprised it wasn't called Captain America 1.1
or 0.1.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. But no, yeah, but I think we all like the new Captain America book.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
See, McNiven's art is awesome as ever.
Yeah, and like Jared was saying, you can just jump in and just read it, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah, and if you're not reading Captain America, you should, and this is the place to do it.
Mark should give this to his wife to read.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe after they see the movie.
Maybe. Yeah.
Depending on if she likes it.
Depending on if she likes the movie too much.
Depending on if she watches movies.
Mm. Ooh. Maybe she's blind. I don't know.
Well, then, matter. Then this Captain America comic is not going to do her much good.
It's true.
All right, so moving on. Like I said before, I was working on the jingle, so I didn't get to read a lot of stuff.
Wait,
but
was this a wife or girlfriend?
I think it's his girlfriend.
Okay.
Way to.
We're pulling for you, Mark.
Yeah, way to put him on the spot.
Yeah, yeah. Pull out that ring, baby.
Ask her.
In other news,
some people are getting married. So I didn't get to read this. Nick didn't read this. I think he was on Facebook. But Jared.
Zynga Poker, baby.
Zynga Poker. That's what it's all about. But Jared, the Cowboys hardcover by, this is ridiculous because by Gary Phillips, who I don't know, and Brian Hurt. Brian Hurt was the artist on this. He's the guy that draws Six Gun, which we all love. But Jared, will you tell people what Cowboys is about?
Sure. It's another of those little hardcovers coming out from Vertigo in their crime line. And it's one of the most. It kind of reads like a movie, but it's one of those amazing like quadruple cross books where just everyone's out to get everyone. And the opening framework is that there's a huge shootout. Everyone is dead except for two people pretty much who are sitting there pointing guns at each other in a very Reservoir Dogs type of way. And they're both angry and cursing at each other. And then one yells out, "You stupid idiot, I'm a cop." And the other one yells out, "You stupid idiot, I'm with the FBI." And then you hear gunshots and it flashes back to like 3 weeks earlier.
Yeah, I read that far. And then after that, it's just kind of double cross after double cross. And
yeah, the basic setup is that to spoil it for you, one guy is a cop and one guy is with the FBI, and they're both going after the same group of criminals, and they're just coming from opposite sides, and neither one knows about each other. And it's just, how far do you go undercover? You know, how far, you know, it's just everyone go out to get something and just tons of bad guys. And it's very complicated. The one thing I have a problem with is that Brian Hurt's an amazing artist. There are just so many characters in this. It's a little bit of trouble to tell them apart sometimes because it's such a complicated plot line.
Well, he does have that cartoony sort of iconic style. So right. I could see that some of his characters would look the same. All these Vertigo crime books have been really good so
right.
far. There have been a few misses. The Chill was a little too supernatural for the line, maybe.
That was a little strange. But
but overall, I mean, if you're into crime books like Incognito or Criminal or Last Days of American Crime, any of the Vertigo crime books are worth checking out. And this one has
this
the
one
bonus
in particular is amazing.
Of exceptional art. Yeah.
I definitely want to read it. It's just, I think me and you both, it's just time issue. We didn't get to read it, but I want to read it as soon as possible. Also, are there cowboys in it?
I do not believe there are cowboys.
Well, you read it, you would know.
That's misleading.
I do not remember any cowboys. Aha!
Is it like Jonah
on
Hex?
The back, but each figure is to, quote, cowboy up when the time comes.
Well, there you go. That's something referring to cowboys. All right, so moving on to DC Comics Presents Batman Gotham Noir. This is by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, the guys that write and draw Incognito.
Those guys.
They do Incognito. They do Criminal. They did Sleeper. They're definitely some of our favorite creators and definitely some of Jared's favorite creators. Jared, why don't you tell people what this book is about?
I love them. It's true. So this is actually a reprint of the Batman Gotham Noir that came out, 10 years ago? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was about that long
ago. A long time ago. So it's in one of their nice little formats where it's an $8 book and you get a cool little story.
Yeah, this is part of the DC Comics Presents line, which is where they're doing a lot of sort of long out-of-print stories in these little $8, 90-page things. It's cool.
Yeah, they're presenting them.
They're definitely presenting them.
But yeah, the basic idea, it's very much like a Batman Year One sort of thing where it's a very noir, dark city, which would be Gotham. And it largely is from the point of view of Jim Gordon, with the idea of Batman as just a kind of myth that terrifies criminals, but no proof, no contact with the cops or anything in it. And noir, double crossing, lots of cool plots and stuff.
Yeah, I just read the first part of this. I haven't gotten completely through it, but it's great. I mean, got Jimmy Gordon in it, you know?
Jimmy Gordon.
And,
who is now a private eye, actually.
And Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips are like hot applesauce and pork chop, you know? They're good stuff.
Are you referencing what I had for dinner the other night?
No. Oh, I'm just really hungry. But also, they're really good together. if you haven't tried them.
Yeah, so if you like anything by these guys, this is worth checking out. There's also a little second story in the back. That's okay, but it's Scott McDaniel, is that the name of the artist? He's not quite as good as Sean Phillips. Although Nick was showing me some older Scott McDaniel art that was pretty interesting. Looked a little more like Frank Miller, except it was in Daredevil. And I didn't know about this Daredevil costume from the 90s.
Costume, it's killer.
Oh, it's like blue, and he's got like armor plates a helmet.
Back when he drank Mountain Dew and stuff, man.
He's eating Doritos.
Hell yeah. Doritos 3D, probably.
Doritos 3D. He was kayaking. That's what extreme people do, right?
That's my Daredevil right there.
Yeah, yeah. He was a hoarder.
Yeah, yeah. He also fought. I think in the issue that I actually showed you, he actually fought the devil. No, it was a devil. Maybe the devil. I don't know.
There are a lot of devils, and they're the devil in Marvel Comics. It's confusing.
Yeah, there are too many devils.
There's Daredevils.
I don't think we should go into it right now. There are too many devils.
Well, let's go into it.
It's making me scared.
Okay, never mind. There's too many devils.
All right, let's go on. Let's move on. Let's talk about Dollhouse Epitaphs, which is by, according to what Nick wrote here, a bunch of writers and Cliff Richards.
Yeah, that's the one thing. When I was looking at this, even when I was reading it, I was like, oh, who wrote this? It's probably like Jed Whedon. It's like Jed Whedon, like five other people, and then scripted by some other guy, which I was like, oh, this is going to be pretty bad.
So Dollhouse is a comic book continuation of the TV show Dollhouse, which was created by Joss Whedon, the guy who did...
It was a Joss Whedon joint.
It's a Joss Whedon joint.
Nobody knows who Joss Whedon is.
No, sure they do, don't they? You're being sarcastic.
He's working on a movie.
Yeah, he did Buffy, he did Angel, he did Firefly, and he's working on the Avengers movie.
He's currently doing the Avengers.
Yeah, and I thought this book was really cool. The art's a little iffy at times, but overall, it's a good continuation of the series. The only thing is, if you haven't watched Dollhouse, there's kind of no point to this. And if you have watched Dollhouse and you liked it, you're probably going to read it anyway.
Yeah.
But so mainly we just want to let people know
what's
out there.
If you watched Dollhouse, now know there's a Dollhouse comic.
At first, it feels a little weird because it takes place before the series finale. But it fills in a lot of gaps, and there's actually a lot of really cool revelations throughout it, which is good.
Yeah, and it's,
it doesn't feel cheap.
No, it doesn't feel cheap, and it feels like I don't know. It's a cool story, there's so much to go into about what it's about. It's really tough to explain.
I was gonna say it doesn't feel like a cash in, but then I was like, wait, they never made any money.
They definitely never made any money off Dollhouse. So that was Dollhouse Epitaphs. Next up, we've got every week we have to have a book that is almost hilariously bad. Maybe Nick might disagree with this one, but for me this week, this was Ghost Rider number one by Rob Williams and Matthew Clark. Basically, there's a new Ghost Rider series. Ghost Rider is now a woman for some...
Ghost Rider's got boobs.
It's true. For some reason, I guess there's a little backup story that explains it, kind of. Yeah, but
which you think would have been the first part of this comic, but whatever.
But it's a really goofy...
It's kind of funny that Ghost Rider has boobs, only because... Ghost Rider is like a skeleton.
And skeletons do not have boobs.
No. But you have to know, I guess, somehow. Just like, in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles live action show where the turtle had boobs for some reason.
Yeah, from my experience, usually skeletons have tuxedos and top hats.
Yeah, 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 yeah. They definitely dance around in top hats.
Yeah, but, I don't know. This Ghost Rider, it seemed like it was kind of trying to capture the feel of the Jason Aaron Ghost Rider from a few years ago, trying to do like a slightly grindhouse thing. But
right, I think that's the biggest problem, is that having had Jason Aaron on Ghost Rider before, you see how awesome and pulpy and ridiculously crazy it could be, and this just doesn't live up to it.
There was a little bit of funny dialogue in it between some of the villains.
I loved, what is it, Death Watch?
I think his name is Death Watch, yeah.
So you didn't read a lot of Ghost Rider back in the day, and when all these villains started popping up, I was like, oh man, these are old school Ghost Rider villains.
Yeah, I was telling Nick, I was like, oh, who are all these dumb characters he's using in this? He's like, oh, they're just people that are
don't call them dumb. You don't understand.
You just don't know what Ghost Rider means to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You didn't see my Ghost Rider tattoo, man? Get out of here.
So maybe it's just like, if you love Ghost Rider, then you'll love this.
No,
maybe?
You'll like it all right.
So, I don't think there's any sort of unanimous liking of this Ghost Rider comic going on around this table.
I loved it.
Did you?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
did.
Yeah.
It's kind of awful, but I loved it. I don't know why.
Just as a sort of, to qualify that a little bit, Nick also loves the Toxic Avenger movies and
Cinemax.
And he loves Cinemax. It's true.
I love all the original series.
Do they have original series?
Yeah.
Sandals and Blood in Camelot.
Maybe that's Showtime.
Maybe that's Showtime. All right, so moving on to a book that I think we all liked, Gladstone School for World Conquerors number 3 by Mark Andrew Smith and Armand Villavert.
I just enrolled in the villain school. Just a side note. Yeah.
Good for you. For your homework assignment, will you talk about this book?
Yes, yes. Gladstone's is one of the best new series I've read this year. It's basically, if you haven't read any of it, it's about a school for up-and-coming villains. They're all, like, children of villains, and they kind of have the same powers. And they're, but, you know, there's a twist that you figure out halfway through, you know, the first issue or second issue. I can't remember. But anyway, the heroes and villains in this universe have a truce, and they're trying to... you know, they have a
secret truce, and like in fact they are battling and doing all the stuff you always read about in superhero comics, but they are really not trying to kill each other.
It's like a show. It's like a pay per view. Like they show up on, they're like, oh, this Friday night is the fight between, you know, Lord blah 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 and superhero
Toxic Defender. Yeah.
But in this issue, we kind of find out that there are some real supervillains who aren't very happy about this truce and are frowned upon by the ruling class of supervillains.
Yeah, it's cool. There's kind of like a slowly building thing where some of the villains are not happy with this truce, and the other ones are angry with him and trying to convince them. And so it's interesting because some of the kids in this, they're being raised to be, you know, they're going to supervillain school.
Yeah, almost so. none of the kids, like the thing they reveal in this is that no one finds out as a superhero or supervillain until they're around 17 that they're in fact not going to be fighting the good or bad guys out there.
Except there's a twist in this issue with that, but don't give that away. I won't spoil that, but it's good.
And this is written by Mark Andrew Smith, who wrote Amazing Joy Buzzards, and one of the Amazing Joy Buzzards characters shows up in this, and he's pretty cool. He's like a luchador that comes out of a lamp.
Oh, really? I didn't know that either.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And, yeah, no, it's a good series.
Also, the art is incredible.
Yeah, the art's really good. It's got a really cartoony, colorful style, kind of reminiscent of maybe like Umbrella Academy and Amazing Joy Buzzards.
Somewhat invincible in a little way.
Cartoony, but with able to like express, like, you know, like there's some really deep parts in this.
But overall, it's a good book. Yeah, if you like stuff like Invincible and you like just fun superhero stuff, this is kind of a fun supervillain book that has a slightly different take on it. It's cool.
Really good.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, so moving on, we've got a book we talked about the first issue before, but we loved it so much we had to talk about the second one as well. That's Godzilla, Gangsters, and Goliaths, number 2. This is by John Layman, the guy that writes Chew, and it's got art by Alberto Ponticelli. I gotta say, the art's not the strongest part of this book. It's a little sketchy, a little scratchy at times.
It's sufficient.
It looks like Godzilla stepped on the artist, but
yeah, he's not great at drawing people, but I will say he is good at drawing Mothra.
Yes. Looks amazing.
His Mothra is radical.
So the basic plot of this is that these Yakuza were trying to kill this guy, and they
a detective,
and they abandoned him on Monster Island, and he took the two little twin girls that control Mothra hostage, and is using Mothra now as a weapon to exact revenge on the Yakuza. That's basically all you need to know.
Yeah, I mean, you do have good lines like, I don't believe I've ever seen Mothra attack only a single person before.
Yeah, it's completely insane, and it's awesome.
If you like giant monsters, and you've ever seen a Godzilla movie, and ever slightly liked it, you'll like this.
Yeah, I'm going to say this is probably the best Godzilla comic ever. There are some good ones, though. I don't know. The old Marvel one where Dum Dum Dugan punches Godzilla in the face is pretty good.
Yes.
And Art Adams did a Godzilla comic in the late 80s, early 90s.
That was really good.
That was pretty awesome, too. But overall, just the idea of this is fantastic.
Don't forget Godzilla versus Barkley. That was probably the best.
Was that a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I will never forget that now.
Just look it up. Godzilla versus Charles Barkley. It's the basketball match of the century.
I am not going to look that up. Moving on to Green Lantern number 67 by Jeff Johns and Doug Monk. Is it Monk? Monkey?
Munch?
Monkey?
Munch.
Munch?
Monkey?
Monk?
Monk.
Anyway, this is the final issue of the ongoing Green Lantern series.
No, what's going to happen next?
Green Lantern number 1 is going to come out in September.
Close one.
Basically, I mean, so much stuff has been going on in Green Lantern over these last 67 issues. It's a lot to get into. Basically, I just want to say that this is a satisfying conclusion to all the stuff that's been building up. It's full of action and full of twists, and this is a really good DC book that came out this week.
Yeah, this is definitely the best DC book that came out this week. We didn't actually talk about any of the Flashpoint books, but those were not good. They were okay.
Yeah, they were okay. Well, there was a new issue of Frankenstein.
Frankenstein was rad.
Yeah. Basically, at this point, though, the main Flashpoint series is pretty awesome, and a lot of the side books aren't really doing it for me.
But besides that, this is the best DC book that came out this week.
I will say, like I said earlier, as someone who hasn't read a lot of Green Lantern people, I read this issue because, you know, I'm leaping on it, you know, to catch up with everybody.
It was fun, right?
Yeah, it again had a lot of stuff. So
it's kind of accessible.
Tying up a lot of stuff, but even with that, it had a really good story, and the ending was compelling enough that I'm like, huh, what happens next?
To me, it was similar to Ultimate Spider-Man number 160, and that, like, I haven't read Ultimate Spider-Man forever, and I was able to jump in and read this. I have been reading Green Lantern, but I still feel like people could just jump in and read this.
Yeah, like I read this, and I was like, you got to read this issue. I mean, it doesn't matter. if you haven't read the last, like, this is like part 10 of War of the Green Lanterns, but you can actually read this issue without reading any of the previous issues.
Yeah, all you have to know is that Jon Stewart killed Mogo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What?
Spoiler.
He killed a whole planet.
I did not know that. Just, wait, yeah, that was he the Green Lantern who was a planet?
Mogo. Yeah, yeah, Mogo was, yeah,
I love
yeah.
that dude. That guy was cool.
He killed the planet like we're killing the planet Earth.
Oh. Is so that sad. Why it's a Green Lantern?
Was that the Justice League?
That's us going into space to find Earth 2. Okay, so moving on.
I've been Earth 2.
I'm going to let Jared talk about this one, too, because Jared is our go-to Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips commentator. The Incognito Trade Volume 2, Bad Influences.
All right, so I just actually read the first one so I could try to remember everything that happened in the second one. This is basically the flip side of Sleeper, which is also one of the greatest comics of all time. In this one, you have a supervillain who is caught and is forced to basically go in a witness relocation program and is like an office guy working, you know, pushing around a mail cart. That is the plot line of the first one. The second one is this new trade where it just came out, and he has basically decided to try to turn over a new leaf and become one of the good guys of the super agency that hunts down bad guys, which does not go well for them in any way.
Is he incognito?
He wears a domino mask, so it's hard to know who he is.
That's what I'm talking about.
Does he wear a Domino's pizza delivery outfit?
Not in this one.
Does he eat Domino's
maybe
pizza?
I'm thinking of the Avoid the Noid comic.
Yeah, yeah. Does he play Domino's on the street?
No.
That's where you play dominoes on the street.
I thought you played on like a board.
No.
Don't
talk to me about dominoes. We don't want
to talk about dominoes anymore. This comic is good.
Yeah, yeah, it's good.
Jared, say it's good.
It's amazing.
No, it's really good.
Say it's good.
I read a good chunk of it, and it's awesome.
All right. So moving on to Lady Mechanica number 2 by Joe Benitez. I'm assuming that's...
Benitez.
Is it Benitez?
I have no idea.
Benitez Applebaum.
Yeah, yeah.
Lady Mechanica is kind of a steampunk thing that's coming out from Aspen. I read 0 and 1, and Jared read all 3 issues, meaning up through number 2. What do you think of this one, Jared?
Let me say that I reread 0 and 1 because that is now available in a nice little combo book because they sold out the first time they came out. And
always the salesman.
What was that, like 8 months ago or something? It's a long time, so I couldn't remember what had happened.
It was in the olden days of old-timey London.
Yes. Well, actually, this is in the olden days of old-timey England.
Whoa. Because
this is a new city. It's not London.
Wait, is it the city called England?
Oh, crap,
is
it?
Is it England, France?
Are there airships in this book?
Is there steam?
There is some steam.
Are there punks?
No.
No.
But there's people with punk attitudes.
What's the plot of this book?
There's a chick named Lady Mechanica who's got some cybernetic attachments. She runs around trying to investigate where she came from because she doesn't remember.
So do you like it?
The story, like I said, reads a lot better when you read 2 or 3 issues all at once. It was a little disjointed the first time around, so I liked it more this time. The main draw, though, is the art, which is amazing.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know.
The art's pretty good. But my main problem was, I was like, I read issue 1, like, you know, like a year ago, and I was like, I don't care anymore. I was like, I'm over it.
That definitely tends to happen. I really liked issue 0.
Did you hold
on
for like 6 months of caring?
Yeah, I was like, I'd rather go to Aspen than read an Aspen comic. And I hate snow.
Well, I will say this is the best Aspen comic of all.
I agree.
Of all the Aspen comics.
Well,
it's still got that kind of Mark Silvestri, Michael Turner art style that I'm not a huge fan of. But I will say that in that style, it is really well done. And the person's really good at drawing like cityscapes, and I mean, it works, and it's kind of a cool mystery comic. It's just maybe not my cup of tea exactly, but I definitely think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, it's got a lady in it. I like that.
And a Mechanica, whatever that is.
And a Mechanica.
All right, so moving on to Loose Ends number 1, written by Jason Latour with art by Chris Bruner. This was a surprise. This is
out of nowhere.
This is this new company, 12 Gauge. There was a little bit of a preview in this in the Free Comic Book Day thing. But this comic I thought was really awesome. Nick, will you tell people what this comic is about?
I'm going to turn into Gene Shalit here and say there were no loose ends in this comic.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. But it was good. It's basically, I mean, it's a crime comic along the lines of Criminal or something, but a little more kind of rough and kind of dirty. It's like, I mean, I can't really say that there's so much of a story right now, but the first issue is just this guy like outside of a bar ordering some beers. And he goes inside, and he knows somebody there. And I don't want to give too much away, but he knows somebody there. And then there's some guys that are some, you know, like rough guys that are in the bar, and they're starting to cause trouble. and things go haywire.
Yeah, basically, there are like a few big things that happen in this book, and to really talk about any of them is to give too much away.
Well, one thing that was interesting about it is that they bill it as an actual Southern crime story.
Yeah, that's definitely what it says. Yeah.
Unlike all the other crime books that are coming out, most of them seem to be set in cities for the most part. This is definitely like kind of rural Southern America.
Yeah, it's really like kind of grimy South.
Like, yeah, it seems like it's maybe at a truck stop or
a terrible bar in the middle of nowhere, and there's nothing around except that bar, and all you do is drink, and that's it.
But I think that sort of rural quality gives it a sort of feel of its own. That's a lot different than things like Criminal, which is usually set in big cities.
Yeah, it kind of makes it a little more visceral in some ways. Yeah. No,
this is some of the best art I've seen in a while. Like, this is, I don't know, I've never seen this guy draw anything else, and it's amazing.
Yeah, Chris Bruner, I think he's done other stuff, but the name sounds familiar, but I unfortunately don't know what those things are. But yeah, it's got a very cool, loose style that's reminiscent of, say, like Nathan Fox or Paul Pope. And
a lot of little things that are they're conveyed through the art that aren't actually like spoken or anything, which is always cool because that hardly ever happens.
Yeah, especially because that's what comics should be doing, and they do so rarely. Yeah.
And I'm the only person that ever cares about this, but it's hand lettered, which is awesome too.
Yes,
oh, really?
The lettering is excellent.
Yeah, the lettering is really good. Lettering doesn't always stand out for people, but they're like hand lettering can make all the difference. It can make something seem a lot more organic.
It feels like homemade, like somebody made this comic instead of like manufacturing.
And it's slightly oversized, which really services the art well. And
the colors were good,
or it serves the art well. It doesn't.
There's some great. Like, I think there's a page that has like 20 panels on it. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's a cool book. We only ordered a few copies here. I don't know if our other stores got it, but I think we're going to try to get everybody to order it in. And it's cool stuff. Definitely worth checking out from 12 Gauge Comics, who are new. And they've got another new book coming out that looks cool too. So
These two new comics of theirs look good. They're definitely better than Luke McBain. Is that the other one?
Yeah, I think that was like, that's why I didn't think this was going to be good. Basically, there was a comic called Luke McBain. I think it was starring the country singer Trace Adkins. And it was like, it was like Dog the Bounty Hunter as a comic book, and it was turds. So moving on to Mystery Men number 3. I think we've talked about Mystery Men maybe twice already on here.
I hope so.
So this is by David Liss and Patrick Zercher, the
writer of Black Panther
and the artist of Terror Incorporated, which was a fantastic miniseries.
Patrick Zercher is my favorite.
Patrick Zercher is very, very good. So I don't know if we want to say too much more about this, but basically check out Mystery Men.
This is a reminder you should be buying it because it's awesome.
There's two new like crazy anti-heroes introduced in this, and it.
Oh yeah, the first guy's amazing.
Yeah, and the story gets taken to like a new like level, and it's this feels like the best like noir superhero movie that would ever get made if it existed.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And with each issue, it seems like they're adding layers to the story, and it gets better and better. And it's very cool. So definitely check out Mystery Men number 3. In the middle of a storybook that's I wanted to talk about, but New Avengers number 14 by Brian Bendis and Mike Diodato. I just, for some reason, I thought this was a really amazing issue of New Avengers. It focused on Mockingbird, who just got like a new power set, basically, where she's as strong as Captain America. And the whole book is from her point of view and about her discovering what she can do while destroying giant Nazi mechs and stuff in the middle of the city. And I just thought it was a really cool comic. Diodato's art hasn't always been a favorite of mine, but over the last few years, starting with Dark Avengers, I think he's been doing really good stuff and interesting stuff with panel layouts. And it was a cool book.
Yeah, it's one of those times you just forget how good Bendis is at just writing dialogue and developing characters, and then he does something like this, and you're like, oh, right, this is why he got so popular.
Also, Wolverine has a line in this where he's taking down a Nazi, and he goes, "Heil this, bub," which is always awesome.
One thing that Bendis does in this that I think might put some people off is something that he's been doing a lot of recently, which is like
the interview thing.
Yeah, doing the interview thing against big set pieces, which I actually like. I think it's kind of cool, but
that's kind of been his Fear Itself like standard.
Yeah, but it's sort of also everything that a lot of people hate about Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah, right. True.
But there's amazing action in this too.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's cool. It's a good, if you haven't been reading New Avengers, It's not as good as it's always been, but here and there have been some amazing issues. Like this one was really great, and there was the issue about Squirrel Girl becoming Luke Cage's nanny.
Oh, next issue is about Squirrel Girl too.
I love Squirrel Girl. I have
Me
to say
too.
That.
What does the preview say? Nuts to this. It's got a picture of Squirrel Girl running. But no, I mean the art, like Mike Diodato, I've loved him. Like I always liked him like back in the day, but I always felt he was a little too stiff and stuff. But in this, like his action scenes are incredible.
Yeah, it's definitely a good book. Moving on to a cool number one that came out this week, Red Wing number one by Jonathan Hickman and Nick Batara. I think a lot of us, until we found out about this, were concerned that we would never see another Jonathan Hickman creator-owned series coming out again. And to see another one of these stark white covers that is always the indicator of a Jonathan Hickman book was a very cool thing. Jared, can you give people a little breakdown of what this book was about?
Partly. Basically, it's a sci-fi comic where the main idea seems to be if you take Top Gun, where you've got some really cool fighter pilot guys, but they fight some sort of aliens or robots or something, we're not quite sure, who have basically conquered the Earth by fighting them by jumping through time.
Yeah, basically it's a massive war through time. Like they all, their ships are built to travel through time. And so they're like, you know, there's dog fights where they're like shooting at each other. And all of a sudden they're like, there's dinosaurs. And then they're in like Rome.
Yeah, they're constantly jumping through different time periods and destroying stuff as they're trying
to kill
each other.
But there's consequences to it. And there's like a good kind of science behind it. It's cool.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the outstanding features of this, is that the science of time travel that Hickman sort of ascribes to in this is really interesting. And they talk about it a good bit in the book. But yeah,
it's they definitely put some philosophy behind this is how time travel will work in this universe. And it's a kind of cool twist.
Yeah, it's a book full of a lot of good ideas. And Hickman's been working on mainstream comics a lot recently, and he's really sort of honed his skills. And I think this is one of the best things that he's done.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of honing his skills, he actually has an amazing artist on it this time, or at least a very good one. He's definitely had a few projects where it's either been him doing it or it's been a very stylized, stiff art.
And yeah, like Transhuman and Pax Romana did. Right.
Who's the guy
art.
Who did this one again? Is this new guy?
Yeah. His name's Nick Patara. I don't really know his stuff, but yeah, he did a really good job. He's got a kind of like a Frank Quitely, Chris Burnham kind of style
feel to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a little junky looking, but solid. Like it's good. Yeah.
It's
cool. A little rough around the edges, but he'll have a few like splash pages stuff. Particularly, I remember the very last two pages, which was amazing, and the ships look cool, and yeah, very well done.
Yeah. So Red Wing's definitely a buy. Moving on to Ultimate Comics Fallout number one by Bendis and Bagley. They're the team that's been doing Ultimate Spider-Man forever. This is basically a book of the aftermath of
that big nuclear explosion that went off.
It's true. Yeah.
The Ultimate Universe.
Now this is the aftermath of the death of Spider-Man, and
this is basically Ultimate Spider-Man issue 161.
Yeah, but they changed it to Ultimate Fallout. There's not a lot to say about it. It was well handled.
I cried.
Did you cry?
There's one moment where they made me cry.
It gets a little emotional.
I saw you tearing up at it too.
Yeah. I was tearing up. I was wiping away the tears.
Yeah.
Off of Nick's face.
It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, if you've been reading Ultimate Spider-Man or then it's definitely worth checking out, of course. Mm-hmm. But if you happen to just jump in and read just the death issue, this is a really good thing to move on to.
Yeah, and this is like a good launching pad to the new Ultimate line. It's everything's relaunching.
So. It's got a little bit of the whole Ultimate Universe brought together, obviously, over this big event. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's very well done. Moving on to what I would assume is Jared's favorite book of the week, which is Usagi Yojimbo, Volume 25 by Stan Sakai. We haven't really had a chance to talk about Usagi on the podcast yet, so this is a good time for Jared to hawk his wares. What's going on?
I've been reading this since I was very, very young, so of course I'm obviously prejudiced against it, and I have a huge history with it, but it's still immensely good. He's been doing it this is the 25th anniversary since he started up this comic book through various four or five publishers, whatever it's been. Maybe 250 issues or something ridiculous over the years. And it's still really, really good. Art's still going really well. And here's a new book for you.
Yeah, I got into it a little late, but I read volumes 1 through 20 in like a span of like 2 or 3 months. And
so
it's
he's only
amazing.
Five volumes behind.
And I've read like the first seven. It's really good stuff. Stan Sakai deserves all the praise he gets. It's cool right now at the Japanese American Museum in Los Angeles. There's a big Usagi Yojimbo art exhibit going on, which is really cool.
Yeah, I really want to go.
Yeah, but it's in LA.
It's a little expensive.
All right, moving on to X-Men Schism number one by Jason Aaron and Carlos Pacheco. This is the first of the sort of big X-Men story that's going on right now. Each issue is going to be by a different artist. This one's by Carlos Pacheco. The second's by Frank Cho. The third's by Daniel Acuna. But
one's by Adam Kubert, and I forget the other one, but they're all amazing.
Yeah, it's all good artists. They've been leading up to this story for a long time, which is kind of a split in philosophies in the X-Men, and the team is splitting, it seems like, between Cyclops and Wolverine.
It's been publicized that, you know, Uncanny X-Men is ending and relaunching, and then there's going to be another book called Wolverine and the X-Men. So there's two separate X-Men teams. And
this is why that happens.
This is where it starts, yeah.
Yeah, and it's well done, and it's really readable. I'm pretty far behind on Uncanny X-Men, but I just jumped in and read this. And
yeah, they made it easily accessible. And this is the best Carlos Pacheco art I've ever seen.
Yeah, the art's amazing.
I've always liked him, but this is far better than anything.
And Jason Aaron is, of course, one of the best writers around right now. He writes Scalped. He did one of my favorite miniseries of all time, which is called The Other Side, which a lot of people tend to forget about.
And
but
Scalped
it's,
is my favorite comic
and,
of all time.
And Scalped is Nick's favorite comic. And this is Jason Aaron.
Ghost Rider, which we just mentioned, was the best Ghost Rider maybe ever.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, if you're an X-Men fan, Schism is definitely a must-buy. But if you want to read new X-Men stuff, this is a really good place to start. And that brings us to our Big Planet pick of the week, which was... Yeah, I need a jingle for that.
That was my car alarm.
I'm going to just do one. Pick of the week. So this was Homeland Directive. This was put out by Top Shelf, written by Robert Venditti, who wrote The Surrogates, with art by Mike Huddleston, who wrote Deep Sleeper. I mean, who drew Deep Sleeper and drew The Coffin and drew Gen 13 for a while. Mike Huddleston's great, but
really good artist.
Butcher Baker.
Yeah, he's doing Butcher Baker right now. Jared, can you tell people what Homeland Directive is about without giving away too much?
Yeah, this is basically like one of those great summer thriller movies you see in the theater in a comic book format. It's very compelling, moves very quickly. There's a big mystery going on, a conspiracy basically within the U.S. government and people trying to figure out and find out what it is.
Yeah, the best line to sum this up is like one of the characters is like, the U.S. government is trying to kill you. And then like you're like, why? And then that's the whole thrust of the story.
Yeah, it's got a very us against them, like people fighting against the government. It reminded me of Red a little bit in some ways like that, the Warren Ellis book.
Yeah, definitely.
But then it's got a kind of outbreak feel to it. There's definitely like a disease that's spreading and people are trying to figure out what's going on. It's a hard book to talk about too much without giving too much away because it's a very mystery laden thriller.
Yeah.
But the pacing in it is fantastic. It moves
it's like
along.
A little bit of a slow build and then
it starts going really fast.
Yeah.
It's thrilling.
Yeah, it's like Jared said, it's just like a very good action movie. I'm sure it's gonna be made into a movie. There's no way this is not going to be made into a movie.
Yeah,
it's better than most movies.
I mean, Surrogates got made into a movie. That's the last thing he wrote. So.
And Mike Huddleston's art is very kinetic. It's got a lot of motion to it. There's a lot of car chases and things in this. And he also does some weird things with like zip tone and Photoshop that normally are the kind of things that would put me off. But the way he did it, it has almost like a cardboard cutout feel to it. And it looks very cool. He uses like clip art and stuff. It's very strange, but...
Style, it works though.
Yeah, he's definitely good at it. He uses the style a little bit in Butcher Baker too right now. It's an awesome book, and definitely I think all of us would agree that was our favorite book of the week. Except Nick, he really liked Black Panther.
Yeah, I'm torn between this and Black Panther.
But yeah, this is a book that I feel like anybody could read. It's not like it's not too highfalutin. It's not too dumb. It's just like a perfect, fun, great book.
Great. Good times.
Yes.
Cool. Well, that's it for this week. And I guess we'll see you guys next week. Don't forget to send us some questions at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. You can subscribe on iTunes or check us out on the webpage. You must be doing one of those things already.
Hopefully.
But yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
Get you later, dudes.
Bye.